we welcome to the program Congressman Chris Gibson from Kinderhook. Good morning, Congressman.
Morning, Bob. Good to be with you.
Well, good to be with you. We have not been with you in the past, but we're with you now, as we were with Congressman Bill Owens last week, because of a sudden we have new members of Congress vying to represent our area. Traditionally, our area has been served by, currently Congressman Paul Tonko, previously Congressman Mike McNulty, kind of the capital district-based congressman. Congressman Tonko, as you probably know, of course, is from our fair city of Amsterdam. But who is it? Let me ask you first, and it gets a little dicey in a sense, in that you don't actually represent this area now, and maybe it's not a given that you will represent the area because you got to win an election, but what area are you seeking to represent in Montgomery County?
So there are five towns in the western part of Montgomery that are going to be part of the 19th Congressional District, and they're St. Johnsville, Palatine, Minden, Root, and Canajoharie.
Okay. Again, western Montgomery County. We sometimes call it Up County. I know that you've been there. What did you think?
I had a great visit. It was about 10 days ago or so. Had an opportunity to meet with leadership from western Montgomery County and to hear firsthand their concerns, and really appreciate the hard work being done all throughout the county. Farming, clearly a major driver of the economy there, and that's something that certainly the district that I represent right now, the 20th District, this is a really the number one driver of the economy in the 20th. So I think this is going to be a natural and easy transition to pick up western Montgomery County. Farming, tourism, small and medium-sized manufacturing, construction, all these elements of the economy central to the 20th District that I represent right now.
And I would say, you know, I hate to bring it up, I suppose, but I have a couple of political questions. I would say politically it's probably a good fit for you in that over the years, really, western Montgomery County has been much more Republican than eastern Montgomery County.
Well, I certainly felt very welcomed. I'm going to be back there again this weekend. I'm going to the pancake breakfast at Ames Fire Department. Looking forward to that, and we'll return again to Montgomery County in about 10 days' time for the Reagan dinner. Right there at the county. So, but in terms of the politics of it, I will tell you that really my leadership that I've been bringing to the Congress is about bringing people together, whether it be about supporting bipartisan budgets or bringing forward amendments to support broadband, working on Lyme disease, trying to change the underlying business environment so we can grow our economy, and that would be necessary tax reform to make our tax code more simple and more fair, to help small business owners and hardworking families, working on bringing regulation in balance, really just looking at ways to try to enhance the profitability of small business. All these things, I think, transcend party lines. And so, in the district that I represent right now, enjoying strong support from Republicans, independents, and some Democrats as well.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to throw you under the bus locally, but as you may know, there's going to be a contest or a new face is running for state assembly here and also for state senate, and the gentleman from your area, the area of Montgomery County that you want to represent, Tom Quackenbush from Minden, has just announced he's seeking the Republican endorsement for state assembly. Apparently, the county committee will meet tonight. There was another gentleman who was going to run, Tom DeMezza, and I'm not really honestly quite sure what has happened to DeMezza's candidacy. Are you prepared to say, hey, let's support Quackenbush, or do you want to learn more about this?
Well, actually, I've had an opportunity to meet Tom, I'm very impressed with him. I think he's going to be a tremendous representative for the area, and so I'm very excited to support his campaign. Yeah, I think he is a guy that can bring people together. A strong leader, understands that we need both business to succeed, but we also need business to take good care of workers. I mean, this is something we have to bring in balance. It's certainly for a former commander in the military, I'll tell you that, that was central to the approach that I took to command. That I refused to accept the false choice that you had to choose between the troops and the mission. I thought that if you work hard enough and if you work your way through difficult circumstances, you can accomplish the mission and look after the welfare of your troops and families. And I believe Tom is a guy that does that as well, and so I'm proud to support him.
Congressman Chris Gibson joins us, and you defeated Scott Brown, who had been elected as a Democrat in the previous district, I guess you'd say.
Scott Murphy.
I'm sorry, not Scott Brown. That's another person, isn't it? Scott Murphy. And pardon my repeated ignorance. Was this the last election, or how many terms are you serving in Congress now?
Well, I'm a freshman congressman. Actually, it's only been a couple years since I retired from the United States Army. I was in the Army for 24 years after graduating from Siena College. So our family's back home. We live around the corner from where I grew up in Kinderhook. And so, indeed, this is my first term in the United States Congress.
And you have mentioned it several times, and having heard interviews with you, I know the major part of your background is that you served in the armed forces. Where did you serve?
Well, I was a paratrooper. I served in the 82nd Airborne Division multiple times, and that included deployments over into the combat theater. I was in the Persian Gulf War as a young man, and then I served three additional times in Iraq after 9/11. In addition to those combat tours, I did a peace enforcement mission with the NATO forces in Kosovo, and I also deployed on a counter-drug operation at one point. And my final deployment was actually leading the brigade task force that was sent by the president to Haiti in the immediate aftermath of the devastating earthquake that occurred there in January of 2010. So seven deployments in total.
Mm-hmm. Now, how do you stand on the subject of military spending? I believe the Democratic Party is pretty keen on cutting spending. Maybe because of your background, just my hunch would be maybe you wouldn't be so much in favor of that.
Well, actually, Bob, I would tell you that I firmly believe, not only from my time as an infantryman, but also this is the area of my doctorate. I took a PhD from Cornell University, and I firmly believe that we can reform the national security establishment. We can change the footing that we're on, which I would argue is still, in the main, a Cold War legacy footing, even though we've had certainly some changes over the past 20 years or so, but it's still largely a Cold War set. I think if we change the intelligence community, consolidate it, streamline it, make it better integrated with the Special Operations Command, I believe we'll be more effective against Al-Qaeda, and that will allow us then to bring our land forces that are currently deployed overseas in overseas bases, bring them back to the United States, reshape those forces, all the while you'll have the Navy to give us assured access to markets and sea lanes. But with this kind of reform, I believe we could actually be safer for less money. So I actually support the president in terms of what he's doing to bring reform to the Defense Department. I've just argued that it actually needs to be more comprehensive. It's not just reform of the DOD. It should be the entire national security establishment, which includes the intelligence community, the over dozen major agencies that comprise the intelligence community, and the DOD, and also the Department of Homeland Security. All of this is part of the national security establishment, and I believe that we need to implement a comprehensive reform, and I think we'll actually be safer. I gave you a couple of examples of how, particularly integrating the intel community with the Special Operations Command, and we could do it for less money,
mm-hmm.
and we need to do it for less money.
Well, that certainly seems to make sense to me, and it's in my head, and I'll throw it out there for whatever it's worth. I heard an interview the other day where this woman had done research on the makeup of our military, and she said that since Vietnam, the military has become separate from most Americans. I mean, obviously you've served, but it's become more of an elite kind of force. You know, it's not the sort of people's army maybe that we had during World War II. Is that a bad thing?
Well, you know, Bob, actually, this was also an area that I studied in great depth. And while it is true that since the advent of the all-volunteer force, you don't see the same influxes from communities all over America. We have professionalized the force. I would also tell you that what's happened over the last decade with the war and the deployments to Iraq and Afghanistan, we've had to significantly rely upon the National Guard and the Reserve Forces, and they've been mobilized. They've served us heroically and very successfully overseas, and they've come back home, and they've reintegrated. So to the degree that they serve side by side with our professional, with our full-time force, these professional National Guard and reservists, actually, when they go back and reintegrate in their communities, they're helping connect the armed forces with the larger society. So, you know, while I understand the scholarship that makes the argument because of the all-volunteer force, I would argue that you have to actually factor in this phenomenon that I just described.
Well, you know, again, go ahead.
Well, you know, I think it's right to raise the question, but, you know, I think that programs such as the Reserve Officer Training Corps, which are done right on our universities, our campuses, keep us connected with society, our military with society. So I think it's certainly a topic that we have to consistently address to make sure, because in a democracy, it's just vitally important that our military reflect the society and certainly hold the values of society. So I think it's right to raise the question. But I would tell you, after all these years in serving in the military, that I think that our military is very much in sync with our society.
Well, it's interesting you bring up that point. I was just talking with a caller. I live in Glenville, where there's an air base. And I have to say, and it's a Air National Guard base, that over the 30 years I've lived there, the soldiers are just much more visible now. I mean, there are more of them.
Well, you know, I've had a visit to the Air National Guard base there at Stratton, and was came away very impressed with the professionalism of that force. And, it's interesting, you get the brief there, and you find out for 7% of the budget, the Air National Guard does about 30% of the mission sets. So it's an incredibly efficient organization of civilian soldiers, if you will, really just professionals that hold both a civilian job and this military job as well, and they do it so incredibly well for all of us.
Congressman Chris Gibson, I thank you for joining us. We hope to have you on again in a couple of weeks as we go on with this political year. And again, the congressman's campaigning in western Montgomery County will be part of the district he's seeking to represent after the elections. Thank you very much.
Bob, thank you very much. I appreciate it, and best wishes to all the listeners out there.
You bet. Take care.